Our TSN Hockey Insider joins us every Tuesday and Thursday during the hockey season. We say hello and good morning. A presentation of the Myers Automotive Group to Mike Johnson. How are you doing this morning, Mike?
Good morning, boys. I'm still recovering from that Toronto-New York Ranger overtime. Do you remember, like, the first month when 3-on-3 was introduced, and there was no system, no idea. It was just 2-on-1 breakaway, 3-on-1 breakaway until someone scored. They all lasted 3 minutes. And then eventually the coaches kind of got a hold of the things. The guys figured it out, how to play some defense. But that Ranger-Toronto game, that was like the first month of a shootout when they just were going up and down with virtually no defense. It was craziness. And Shesterkin, what a performance by him to kind of steal a point. You're right.
Yeah, lots of fun for sure. That I think somebody clocked it at 2 minutes and 44 seconds straight, where it's up and down the sheet. That being said, do you like the way that are you good with the way 3-on-3 overtime is right now? Some people have advocated they don't like being able to take it back out of the offensive zone, too much regroup, or maybe not being able to take it out past center ice. Like, any issues with you on that, or do you like the way it is right now?
No, I think it's fine. I don't have a problem with taking back, regroup, passing your goalie, whatever. I mean, possession is the name of the game, and if you don't want that to happen, you try to implement some sort of defensive system that doesn't let it happen. I mean, there are other, there's opportunities to pressure up ice if you want to, if you're the defensive team. They're just choosing not to. The only thing I would do, I would be inclined to extend 5-on-5. 3 more minutes, 5 more minutes. Like, I know the players, the PA, are concerned about wear and tear and the same guys playing a few extra minutes, but 3-on-3 hockey is not hard on your body. No one's getting hit. You're just skating up and down the ice making plays. I think just a little bit more of it would encourage more games to end in that way as opposed to getting the shootout, which is the one thing I would probably prefer to do if I could be greedy in overtime. But I don't have a problem how people are playing it. Maybe just see a little bit more of it so it ends more games.
My next question or kind of statement, Johnny, won't play to the locals, but it used to be, I think, when the European players first came over, when the Montreal Canadiens were winning a lot of Stanley Cups, that was kind of the hockey mecca. When you see Panarin and Zibanejad yesterday, and just overall, would you say for the European player that playing in Toronto and that whole atmosphere is probably a real big deal for a lot of guys at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. But, I mean, I think that the traditional stops are all pretty prevalent still, what the European or North America players, for that matter. But, I mean, I think, if there's a team that has a history with Europeans, like if you're a Swedish guy and maybe you go into Toronto, you think about Matt Sundin, or you go to Vancouver, you think about the Canucks, and there's maybe some sort of draw there. I think the big markets, the big cities, always are of interest no matter where you're from. So playing in Toronto, playing in New York, playing in Montreal, playing in Chicago, like those kind of buildings, that kind of history generally appeals to them. And I think that's why you see a lot of guys drawn to play in those markets, Florida being one of them, Miami as well, European or otherwise. Like, those are good places to live. So I think that's, as much as anything, is why they might enjoy playing in those buildings.
Matthews didn't look like he missed a beat playing his first game. 8 shots, 16 attempts. I mean, he did everything but score in the game last night. We got a web poll question we're running today on the Rocket Richard Trophy winner. We threw in Ovi because, well, he scores a lot of goals every year. But who's going to win the Rocket this year? And we put only three names. Ovi, Matthews, or McDavid. What would you choose as we sit here this morning?
I mean, I think the percentage play is still Matthews. I mean, I don't know if he has a game again this year like last night and does not score. I mean, he just scores all the time. He's just so good at it. And you give him that volume of chances, he's going to get goals and more than one. I think it's probably McDavid, Draisaitl, Matthews, and I guess you have to throw Ovechkin because you have to throw Ovechkin. I still think Austin Matthews, but I said it last week, like, my value play for the Rocket is McDavid. He was like +750. Good odds for a guy. If anything happens to Austin Matthews where it's a slump or he gets injured, can't play every game. Like, I think Connor's got a little bit of the Sidney Crosby. Remember the 1 year Sidney Crosby kind of like dedicated himself to scoring more? He went and scored 50, 51, won the Rocket. I think Connor wants to achieve that. And I think on that power play, if he can learn how to shoot one-timers as well, there's a very good chance that he could be right up there. But Matthews is the best guy, but I wouldn't sleep on McDavid either.
Do you like the feel? Well, first of all, Marner's energy, but do you like Richie with those two?
You know, I read Sheldon Keefe's comments about him keeping the pucks moving and, you know, a lot of plays, you know, continue on with him. And that's nice. It's nice that your coach is trying to advocate for you and make you feel good. I haven't loved it yet. Now, we'll see what happens when Austin Matthews plays, right? Like, I mean, playing with Tavares is different than Matthews and Marner together. So we'll see. I mean, Matthews was dominant last night. He was incredible. I haven't seen a ton of burst for him. He doesn't get into a lot of touches in and around the net, which is where he's good. Big body, pretty good hands. So I guess I'm still taking a wait-and-see mindset, but I haven't been blown away. It's not like he's locked down that spot by any stretch.
Big topic yesterday. We'd love to get your thoughts on what happened with the Leafs on the weekend, having to use University goalie Alex Bishop as a backup because they've run into salary cap issues already. A lot of people advocating for, hey, listen, we should loosen the rules a little bit. We don't want necessarily that to happen. A lot of people, other people say, listen, it's a hard salary cap. Everybody's got to deal with the same rules we've been dealing with for the last 16 years. Where does Mike Johnson fall on that argument?
I fall on the latter. Listen, you can organize your team any way you want. Like, you don't have to be put in a spot where you're pinched if there are injuries that crop up. Colorado played with not enough players last week. No one was going crazy over that. I mean, the Leafs elected to dress a backup goalie that would very likely not be involved in the game in any capacity, as opposed to dressing a regular goaltender and 17 skaters. Like, they made that conscious choice, and they know that if this came up, they would be put in that position. It's not news to the Toronto Maple Leafs or the Colorado Avalanche or anyone else. I think it's just part of the hard salary cap, and it happens. I'm not offended by it. I don't think it makes the league too bush league. The backup goaltenders almost never play anyway, so it's not a big deal to me. The only caveat I would put into that would be, while COVID is still going on, and if your guys are vaccinated, you know, if you test positive and you can't play for 2 or 3 days, but you're not going to go on the LTIR on long term list, maybe in that situation, if there's a breakout and 3 or 4 guys can't play, then maybe there's flexibility just for COVID related things. But not for regular injuries. No, I don't have a big problem with it.
Any worries about Tavares, or way too early, 4 games in?
No, way too early. Way too early. I mean, he's been such a consistent player. Even last year on the down year, he still had, by most measures, a really productive season. Age is going to be an issue for him. I think everyone understood that when he signed that contract, whether it was year 5, 6, or 7, you're hoping it wasn't going to be year 3 or 4. I don't know if we're there yet. I think we need to see the power play get organized, Simmer. I think we need to see the line solidify, and then we can have that conversation. And remember, he's also coming back from a pretty serious injury, more kind of a mentally, emotionally kind of injury. So we'll give him a little bit more time. But, I mean, at some point, the play is going to drop off. It's just a question of how much and how fast.
We haven't talked to you since last Thursday, and it was shortly after we hung up with you that Brady Tkachuk did eventually sign his deal with Ottawa. He's expected to play his first game on Thursday. How do you think DJ Smith should handle it in terms of just ice time, and what do you think we're going to see from Brady Tkachuk in the first few games?
I think you're going to be a pretty spirited young player, run into a lot of people. Like, I mean, I think, you know, Brady is a uniquely skilled talent player that, you know, the foundation of the game is kind of energy and work based. So I think you'll see not a guy, you know, that's going to come in and try to, you know, stick handle around guys. You might notice that his sauce passes are a little bit off. Like, he's going to put the puck in the corner. He's going to bang around to get it. He's going to go to the front of the net. He's going to bang around to get it the same way he does when he's playing at his very best. If I'm DJ, I probably try to monitor his ice time and try to keep him around 15, 16. It'll be hard to, especially if the game's close, especially if there's lots of power plays, but just kind of be mindful of how much is out there. He hasn't played, I don't care how much Ann Arbor, how many first round picks at Michigan, it's not the same. So just be mindful of trying to overextend him in the first kind of 3 or 4 games. But yeah, I would expect to see kind of exactly what we usually see out of Brady, which is a very physical player battling for pucks in and around the net. It's what he does well, and he'll do more of it.
I think he's going to be the next captain, John. I think everybody agrees. Do you slap the C on him Thursday, or do you like the approach of waning a little longer to kind of decide?
What are we deciding? He's the captain. I don't get this at all. I don't get why they didn't, like, when he came out and did Frank the Tank in front of the crowd, they're chanting Brady. Like, just put the C on him there. Like, we know what's happening. I don't get what the delay is for. There's no pressure on him if he gets it. He knows he's going to have it. That's why, you know, it's all, they probably even talked about it when he signed his contract. I don't think Shabbat or any of the guys wearing A's would be like, oh, I didn't know that was going to happen. Everybody knows it's going to happen. So just do it. I mean, don't wait. Just don't make him play a game with an A. Just give him a C, whether it's the last appearance on the weekend or if it's going to be for his first game on Thursday. I think there's no point. The decision's made. There's no point in waiting anymore.
The NHL has suspended Evander Kane for the first quarter of the season, 21 games. By all accounts, he is not universally loved within that San Jose dressing room. He's still got over, I think he's got either 3 or 4 years left at $7 million a year. It's a difficult situation for Doug Wilson in San Jose. How do you think that they're going to handle that with when the suspension is over, I mean?
Well, I mean, quite frankly, I think they will take the next, 5 weeks, 6 weeks that he's suspended, and they will explore whether whatever has happened would be cause to terminate his contract, not buy it out, but terminate it through some sort of clause violation, whatever it might be. I think they would take that route if they can. And it's not about him not being a good player. He was their best player last year. And he's still a really good player. I just think where that team is headed and the salary and everything else and the off-ice issues, they would probably be happy to move on without him. And so they'll try to explore that avenue. If that can't happen, because the contract's not able to be voided that way or whatever, they wouldn't buy him out this year. They may go the D'Angelo route from last year, where they just kind of send him home, pay him this year, and then buy him out in the summer. And that'll be a costly buyout for a team that has no cap space. I can't imagine there'd be many takers with that much term on his contract. On 1 year, you might have a team take a flyer and say, you know what, we'll try. If it doesn't work, then we'll just kind of move on from him. But I almost feel like it's past the point of him, you know, going back and playing and then maybe facilitating a trade. It feels like, you know, San Jose would like to move on if they can, and they're going to find a way to do so. I don't know if he plays again for San Jose.
Surprised he turns 31 next summer, Johnny. Do you almost see a crazy scenario, him heading to the KHL, trying to make some dough back?
Well, I mean, the sad reality is he does need money. I mean, he's gone through a bankruptcy hearing, and he does need money. So I could see if he did somehow get bought out or whatever his contract, like, and he's getting $1 million offer next year, he might be inclined to go there and say, I'll take my three or four tax-free in the KHL before I play for $1 million in the NHL. I could see that happening. And I feel bad. And like that's unrelated to that most recent vaccination issue. You know, guy's got financial problems. It sucks that he's 31 years old and he's made $40 million in his career and he's got to worry about playing for money. That's brutal. Some of the problems are of his own making, but it's still awful. And I could see him, you know, chasing the money because he needs to, and that's too bad.
Well, the season is exactly a week old. Most teams have either played 3 or 4 games so far. At what point it doesn't matter what team we're talking about, would you start to worry about your own team? Like how much water is under the bridge before you go, this is not working out like we thought that it would?
8 games, maybe, right? A tenth of the season? Especially if everyone's getting healthy and there are people, everyone's in the lineup that you expect to be there, then yeah, I think 8 games or so, you can start drawing some conclusions about what you're seeing. How we playing, who is good, who is up to the challenge of taking a step this year, who's taking a step back, what's our goaltending. So 8 games, about 3 weeks, and then I start to start making decisions based on what I've seen.
Are you keen to assess Montreal tonight against San Jose and start to get a better vibe? And looks like Hoffman's pretty close to playing as well.
Yeah, Hoffman back. I think Edmonton is a big part of that. I mean, he's not a superstar player, but they're thin on defense. I mean, you look at their defense now. They don't have, without Weber, without Edmonton, Sherratt's not quite as good. And Savard, as you like to say, Simmer, you're worried about his boots. Like, he's not the fastest guy out there. I am curious, though. It's been not a good start. Toronto was okay. Buffalo was awful. Ranger was okay. Suzuki and Caulfield haven't got on track just yet, and there's so much expected from them and of them. They need some good things to happen. They need to get on the board, but it's tough. I mean, I think a lot of people thought they were going to take a step back and have a hard time making the playoffs. Nothing in the first couple of weeks has shown me otherwise. They're going to be in tough this year. So we'll see when guys get back if anything changes, but I don't know. I think it's going to be a grind kind of year. They're going to be on the bubble for most of the year.
Bergevin, no contract. Now rumors coming out in L.A. and all that. And, hey, it's Montreal. Will this at some point just become too much where you're better to just say, hey, move on versus finishing out the year?
No, I don't think so. I mean, but I do think rumor like that comes out that would warrant a conversation with Jeff Molson and say, all right, listen, are you setting groundwork for working somewhere else? And I mean, there's some human nature there. There are relationships. There's conversation that might happen. But, I mean, he just signed Suzuki to an 8-year, $64 million contract. So he obviously still has the authority to do whatever he wants with the Montreal Canadiens. I don't have a problem with this lame duck GM stuff. Zimmer doesn't do it for me. Nobody has a problem with the player plan on the last year of his deal. No one thinks that he can't play and perform given his last year. So why can't a coach that way or a GM that way? He's been around long enough. He's not going to sewer the franchise in an effort to save his job or get an extension. He's past that. So I would not feel inclined the need to let him go or make a move because he might be going elsewhere next year. No, if you trust him, and they clearly do because they just signed that massive contract last week, I'd let him keep doing his job.
All right, good stuff. Where do you find yourself this week as far as your schedule goes?
I will be on the panel for the Sens game on Thursday night against San Jose, and I will be in Ottawa for the afternoon game on Saturday, my first trip in Ottawa, so it'll be a good week.
Nice. Is Mike Johnson a between the benches guy or are you an upstairs guy?
I am always between the benches when they let me go there. Absolutely.
All right. Good. Look forward to it. A couple of Sens games coming up. In fact, the only two games this week. Thanks for the convo this morning. We'll look forward to chatting with you again on Thursday.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
All right. There's Mike Johnson joining us.